Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our Q3 2016/2017 results call. As usual, please take note of our disclaimer. As a reminder, all figures in the presentation are before special items, unless otherwise noted. I will now hand you over to Olaf to present our Q3 results.
Well, thank you, Christian, and good morning, everyone. I'm very pleased to welcome you to the first analyst call for the new Metro. As a relaunched company, we want to focus on customer proximity, simplicity, and transparency. In that spirit, we took the liberty to implement a few changes to our quarterly presentation. In December last year, we've communicated our ambition for overall sales growth, reported EBITDA margin, and free cash flow conversion. While this is a midterm ambition, the third quarter provides an extraordinarily good glimpse of where we are headed. We have delivered strong sales growth, a stable EBIT margin, enhanced reported earnings due to lower special items, and significantly improved free cash flow. Let me walk you through the individual items. Firstly, our like-for-like sales grew by a strong 2.6% compared to last year. Reported sales even grew by 4.9%. Significant contributor to this development was once again our delivery business, which grew by more than 30%. Secondly, reported EBIT margin improved measurably to 2.3% on the back of a stable wholesale margin and significantly lower special items. As you know, we will stop reporting special items as of the beginning of fiscal year 2017/2018. The fourth quarter, however, will still include special items predominantly linked to the demerger. Kindly note that in line with the midterm ambition, we will also shift our focus from EBIT to EBITDA with the beginning of next fiscal year. Thirdly, with more than 300 million euro increase versus last year, our free cash flow rose quite significantly. Again, this can largely be attributed to lower special items, as well as a year-on-year improvement in change in net working capital, partially including seasonal tailwinds. To discuss these developments in more detail, I now hand over to Christian, CFO of the new Metro.
Thank you, Olaf, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Even though I've met quite a few of you in the last couple of months, this is my very first time on a results call, and I would therefore like to reiterate that I'm very much looking forward to working with all of you. Now on the numbers. As Olaf has already mentioned, we had a strong like-for-like growth at both sales lines, Metro Wholesale as well as Real. At Metro Wholesale, like-for-like sales were up 2.6%, and all clusters came in with a positive like-for-like growth. France, Turkey, and Germany developed particularly well, while we saw no trend improvement in Russia, and the Netherlands continued to struggle. In Russia, we still perform in a challenging market environment with lower traffic and demand in the food sector, despite an improved macroeconomic development. Olaf will share more insight later, but our view on the market potential is unchanged. On a reported basis, sales were up by 6.2%, driven by expansion of our operations and currency support. At Real, like-for-like grew by 2.5%, supported by a slight calendar effect. Despite having nine stores less than in the prior year, reported sales came in at +0.7%. In addition, we continued to see very positive trends for both sales lines in terms of new sales channels. At Metro Wholesale, delivery, including our acquisitions, were once again a main driver with around 30% growth to roughly 17% sales share. Equally, the online business at Real grew by roughly 70% to a 1.5% sales share. Let's now have a look at the EBIT development. In Q3, the EBIT of Metro Wholesale increased to 256 million euros, driven by the countries with strong like-for-like growth. Excluding some currency support, the result is still 3 million euros above prior year. At Real, EBIT decreased to -2 million euros. We operate in a very competitive environment in Germany, and we therefore decided to invest in prices and marketing to strengthen customer relevance. Due to 17 million euros lower real estate gains in Q3 compared to last year, the EBIT of Metro overall decreased by 9 million euros to 230 million euros. Moving on to EPS. While EBIT before special items is only slightly below last year, EPS came in at 24 euro cents versus 36 euro cents last year. Let me explain you why. While the financial result and the tax rate are largely stable year on year, the Q3 other financial result was negatively impacted by the valuation of intercompany receivables in foreign currency. However, these effects are of a non-cash nature and have been broadly neutral over the nine-month period. Although we have significantly reduced volatility of the other financial result in the past and continuously work on further optimizations, we have to accept some residual volatility due to our highly international footprint. As a result, EPS before special items in Q3 came in below prior year. On a nine-month basis, however, EPS before special items increased by 27 euro cents to 1 euro and 8 cents. Equally, on a reported basis, Q3 benefited from the significantly lower restructuring charges and EPS increased from 14 euro cents to 21 euro cents. Moving on to free cash flow, which is one of my key topics in the coming years. We saw a good development in Q3 due to significantly lower special items and improved net working capital. Let me walk you through some detail. First of all, reported EBITDA increased to 389 million euros based on stable operating development and significantly lower special items, containing restructuring costs at Metro Wholesale and the merger-related topics. Change in net working capital improved significantly by 166 to minus 24 million euros. This development was supported by the Easter shift and timing effects such as day constellation. CapEx, excluding M&A and finance lease extensions in Q3, was on prior year level and was invested mainly in maintenance, remodeling, software development, and some store openings. Overall, free cash flow came in at 180 million euros in the quarter compared to negative 127 million euro last year. Net debt stood at 3.8 billion euros at the end of June, which is roughly 180 million euros higher than one year ago. The increase is largely driven by M&A activities, namely the acquisition of Pro-à-Pro this year. That was a run through our key financials. I'll now hand it back to Olaf to discuss the strategic developments of Metro in more detail.
Thank you, Christian. And let me start with a strategic update of Metro Wholesale. As our sales figures illustrate, we are gaining relevance across our business portfolio. This is driven by various initiatives within the VCPs that ensure that we are permanently adjusting and refining our business model by optimizing assortments, services, solutions, and formats to create more value for customers. And this all happens with maximal localization. In addition, we push our presence in delivery forward. We already have achieved a strong basis, but we are fully aware that this can only be the beginning. Last but not least, value creation in our business heavily depends on the strength and the engagement of our teams. It's the motivation of each associate and the power of trusted collaboration which makes the difference. Employee engagement is the most essential success factor, so therefore, let me start with it. As you might remember, we talked about the importance of our own people on this journey on the Capital Markets Day, and I'm very proud to say that over the last year, more than a third of all countries have increased their engagement index from previous year's level. Metro Germany alone had a substantial increase of 4 percentage points. The Employee Engagement Survey 17 is already the eighth annual survey with about 90% of employees taking part. Secondly, in the last 9 months, we have significantly advanced with onboarding more countries and stores to our Net Promoter Score program. Just to remind you, Net Promoter Score, or NPS, is a very powerful tool to drive customer loyalty and ultimately sustainable growth. It gives you one number to measure customer experience. It provides empowerment to employees to engage even more with customers and foster promoted behavior. As of today, we have completed the NPS pilot phase and initiated it in 8 countries that represent about 70% of sales. By end of next year, the NPS concept will be implemented in all 754 stores, replacing our currently used internal customer pulse tool. Regardless of a small quarter, we have once again demonstrated a substantial top-line growth. These results are to a large extent attributable to our local teams. Over the last few years, the local teams have realized that in some developed markets, our format needs to adjust and thrive, the same way as our customers have in the meantime. We understand and value the fact that the needs of small and medium-sized businesses have changed, and we need to adjust the business model accordingly. We understand that we need a store which is easy to navigate, an experience which is scalable and multiplicable, yet an experience which remains true to our identity. We have approached this task in two different ways. First of all, our new operating model has empowered the countries to be in many ways daring and forward-thinking, not only in the context of a store, but the whole customer choice and value proposition. Many of the countries have analyzed their USP and assortment proposition in relation to a country's specific customer base. And now we start to see the positive results of these adjustments already, and it will further amplify the importance of understanding and reacting to our customers' needs. Secondly, as a way of adjusting our business model, we have started to open smaller stores. This gives us a chance to minimize the regional distance to the customer. On average, over the last 5 years, we have decreased our store size by about 10%, attributable both to smaller new store openings and modifying existing stores. In our trader cluster, we have even decreased the average store size by 20%, which is both driven by smaller store openings as well as remodelings. Moreover, I want to share with you one of the newest store openings in France, Alès, with net sales area of 1,250 square meters, almost unheard of in our business before. The store is fully fitted to meet HoReCa customer needs. The overall experience of this compact store is further enhanced by self-checkout systems, digital ordering system for bulky items, and an online shelf extension. This leads to not only more efficient use of space and CapEx, but also simplification of processes for both employees and customers. In addition to the overall warehouse improvement, the countries have also reviewed an integral part of our business, namely the assortment. As I've mentioned earlier, as the needs of our customers change, we have to adjust our assortment accordingly, and this applies to all operations. Again, for example, in France, the local team's objective was not only to develop in-store traffic, but also to optimize the customer journey. In the first wave, we have delisted more than 5,000 SKUs, but introduced an additional 2,000 more HoReCa-relevant SKUs. This business model adjustment has led to solid frequency and invoice growth, primarily driven by the new listed assortments. As we grow HoReCa and trader customer groups across the portfolio, we also see an overall decrease in sales share of non-food, which helps us in many ways to focus on our core specialty categories, namely food. As we continue to look into our assortment proposition, own brands will play an even more important role than ever before. Hence, we have started a rebranding under the Metro name to further solidify our image as champion for independent business. As you can see, 85% of our buying customers are purchasing own brand assortments, and even a larger percentage of HoReCa customers are buying own brands for their business needs. Having the trust of our customers is not only assortment breadth and availability, but in providing them with solutions to save their time and money is at the very core of our purpose. With that in mind, we can strive even more for better solutions and services. Now, our current brand share is at 60% only. So that means there is a clear upside potential in this area. Delivery played as important role in achieving the substantial like-for-like growth of almost 3% this quarter as the warehouses. This quarter, we have continued to deliver double-digit growth in delivery. As we grow further, we channel the delivery business into depots and dedicated store areas. For this professionalization, we are incurring some startup costs. We're permanently improving our performance in terms of customer service and solution focus. We are upgrading our capabilities and will continue to invest in this area. One of our priorities in this context is digital ordering, which you talked about Q2. Reporting. Digital plays a very important role all across our sales lines and will continue to play a pivotal part in our strategic journey. Metro Wholesale is a reliable partner for the last mile for our customers. For us, this trust means we have the correct assortment in place, reliable solutions, and more importantly, the correct employee mindset to make all of this happen. We will continue to roll out more delivery-based solutions for our customers, and we will be happy to share with you the results. Now, let's move on to Russia. In recent months, we have received many, many, many questions on our operations in Russia and wanted to use the previously outlined components to show you what's going on in our Russian business. It's not easy times on macroeconomic terms in Russia, but regardless of the headwinds which the majority of our retail competitors are facing as we do, we have further strengthened our value proposition for professional customers, following the same recipe as just outlined: employee activation, adjust the business model, and push into delivery. As of today, already more than 50% of sales come from the strategic focus groups, HoReCa and Trader. Over the last years, those two groups showed clear growth, while the SEO share has decreased measurably. Employee engagement in Russia was 85% this year, which is once again one of the highest in the group. This exemplifies the great work that is done by the management team in Russia. Similarly, the non-food share has decreased to almost group average. We see this as a sign of ongoing maturation of the market and consequently shift towards HoReCa and Trader. As a result, we have quite significantly adjusted our business model to even further differentiate ourselves from the food retailers in the market. In Russia, ambitious expansion plans of modern retailers jeopardize the existence of traditional traders. Those traders suffer from underdeveloped merchandising concepts and assortment planning. Therefore, Metro Russia has started to offer a franchise concept called Fazol to its existing trader customers and new customers who already run a trader shop or would like to open one. We have gone a quite long way in terms of assortment and service shaping since the opening of the first franchise store. It is absolutely clear for us that there is no franchise solution comparable to ours available in the Russian market. By now, we have opened more than 240 franchise stores. Based on the customer feedback, the newest gas station format is also working well, with sales uplift to 30 to 80% once remodeled. In terms of delivery, we equally see a lot of potential in the 15 largest Russian cities in the next few years. In June this year, we have opened the first depot in St. Petersburg, catering towards both Fazol and HoReCa customers. We also remain positive on Russia due to the continued improvement of macroeconomic parameters. GDP continues to grow, and consumer sentiment finally shows signs of improvement. The overall macroeconomic statistical trends support a continued recovery of the Russian economy. So overall, the Metro Wholesale division delivered strong financials driven by a good strategic development in Q3. So now let's move on to Real. Next to Real's good like-for-like sales performance, we also see continued strong performance in the pilot store, where we introduced our food lover concept. Since the opening last November, we have reviewed the whole model and see a definite general proof of concept. Based on our learnings, we have also refined the concept in terms of sales area and investment requirements. In the coming month, we will implement the refined model in Braunschweig, and have also decided to roll out selected modules across the broader portfolio in the very near future. The online business also continues to improve significantly, growing by around 70% and reaching 1.5% of the total sales in Q3. In addition, we see more than a third of orders already coming from mobile devices. We are now offering around 10 million SKUs in 5,000 categories in association with more than 4,000 partners. In summary, a quite solid quarter for both sales lines with strong progress in their respective strategic agendas. Now, ladies and gentlemen, those were the highlights of the past 3 months. As most of you are aware, there is no specific guidance for the current financial year. However, I wanted to take this opportunity to reconfirm the midterm ambition we have set at the Capital Markets Day in December 2016. And those are at or above 3% sales growth, an EBITDA margin of roughly 5%, a free cash flow conversion above 60%, and a tax rate below 40%. In addition, we wanted to make you aware of a few technical effects for the upcoming fourth quarter, including last year's real estate gains and the one-time gains, as well as expected net working capital development. Q4 will mark the last quarter in an intensive transition year, in which we report special items which will include the demerger cost. We also understand that our reporting over the last years has often been complicated and that many of you spend a great deal of time trying to understand underlying trends. Well, listen, we have heard your comments and continue to review our reporting. In addition to the changes introduced in this presentation already, there might be further changes from Q1 next year onwards. Feel free to reach out in case of any questions on this. Last but not least, I am very happy to invite all of you to join us on 21st of September in Düsseldorf for a Metro Unbox Day, where you will not only get to visit Metro Wholesale and Real stores, but also get an update on the strategy for Germany and experience the top initiatives of every major business entity within the new Metro. If you'd like to join, reach out to Investor Relations, as there might still be a few places available. Please also note our upcoming reporting days for the fiscal year trading statement and annual report.
So much from our side. Now let's start our Q&A session.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time we'll begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star, followed by one on a touch-tone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star, followed by two. If you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selections. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. And one moment for the first question, please. The first question comes from the line of Sridhar Mahamkali of Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Good morning. Two, three questions, please. First one, in terms of real estate gains, can you give us a sense of how we should be thinking about it next year and or perhaps medium term? That will be helpful. And I think Russia, you've made quite a lot of comments, which are very helpful, Olaf, but can you perhaps talk a little bit about whether you saw any sequential improvement in sales trends? You called pretty significant decline in the commentary in the release, but can you talk quarter on quarter if there was any improvement in the like-for-likes? And also your confidence in maintaining margins. I know you've said margins this year will decline, but broadly, what's your sense now in terms of margins? And the third one, give us a sense of special items, what we should expect in Q4. Clearly, you're calling out this is the last quarter for special items. It would be helpful to know the magnitude. Those three things, please. Thank you.
Yes, Shrida, I take the real estate gain question. I think in the first place, it is very important to state once again that real estate and its development is a very integral part of our business. So that will continue to stay in that way. We haven't given a guidance for the short term, but we have made that statement before. And the transaction gains that you have seen in the past, basically, that you could continue to see just overall on a normal level as an integral part of our business. And we will continue working on that with respect to the owned locations, but also seeing the one or the other transaction whenever it is optimal for our organization.
Okay, on Russia, I think what we can say there is that the market, by all means, is still in difficult shape. However, as I shared with you, the statistics we see on macroeconomics show that there is an encouraging development, and that is now going on for quite a while, quarter by quarter. It's not fast. It's not a steep recovery, but it looks like it's one that is sustainable, and that is also supported by some other observations which we have in the food sector, which looks like finally volumes are at least breaking even with an indication that they could pick up. But I would still say it's a volatile market, so I would not talk about a sequential improvement. I would just say what we always have said, it is a difficult environment, but we are in absolute control of the business because our management team has taken all actions necessary to make sure that we keep on being relevant for our customers, that we protect our market share, and actually that we also protect our earnings quality. And that's what we have committed to and we remain committed to. So therefore, I can reassure you there, we are in good shape and we are also committed on our midterm ambition in Russia.
With respect to special items development, I think in the very past, in the old Metro Group days, we have made a statement on this one. I do not want to comment on this now specifically, but you will have seen that significant parts of the demerger-related accruals and provisions have been made, and we are now going basically through the last phase of really having these situations, but most of the provisions have basically been done. And as stated before, from the next fiscal year onwards, we will not be reporting special items at all anymore.
Just one quick follow-up question, just in terms of, again, real estate gains next year and or medium-term guidance, whenever you come to guide the market on EBIT before special items or EBIT in general as for next year. Would you consider giving that sort of guidance without any real estate gains in it, or would you be able to actually give a guidance on an ongoing kind of annual basis? How do you look at that from a transparency point of view? Clearly, you're making a lot of efforts to move in that direction, but it will be helpful to understand how you're thinking about communicating specifically on that.
Yeah, I think in the light of what Olaf mentioned with respect to transparency and pragmatism in our reporting going forward, it's important to have in mind that, yes, real estate is very much structural in our business and an integral part. On the other hand, it is also a patchy business with respect to transaction gains in the one or the other quarter. So rest assured that we are thinking about how to appropriately show the two pieces that are an operational part of our business down the road in order to make your life also easier with respect to forecasting and your expectations on our business.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Fabienne Caron of Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, everyone. I've got two questions. The first one on Russia again, please. When you reported your Q2 standalone numbers after the Q2 result, we could see that the Eastern European margin was up, so which implied that the margin in Russia was up in Q2 despite difficult like-for-like. So I was wondering if you were successful again in Q3, because you talk about negative like-for-like, were you successful in increasing your margin year-on-year, as it looks you did in Q2, or did you keep it flat? This would be my first question. And the second question for like-for-like in cash and carry, you talk about negative like-for-like for the Netherlands. Can you talk a bit about Belgium? Because I think you have started as well your VCP program in Belgium. How did like-for-like move over there? And it would be as well useful if you could give a bit more detail of what you've exactly done in the Dutch market and in the Belgian market, please.
Well, as you know, we always refrain until this point to show and comment a single country's margin development. What we have stated is that we are committed to protect the level of margins in Russia, plus minus, and that we take all actions necessary. And as I said before, while we see that the market remains challenging, and we actually are preparing for the next fiscal year, that the team is fully committed to do that also for the upcoming 12 months, then starting as of October 1st. And you hear it from the tone of my voice and the way I commented that we are committed to it and we feel quite solid about it because of our unique profile. So beg your pardon, we'll not comment on the margin development of a single quarter in Russia in the way we're reporting numbers as of today.
Olaf, just a question before. Will you give us at some point again the segment reporting per region, because I couldn't find it in this release?
Yes. The yes means I heard your question. I am fully aware that what I mentioned before is not just lip service. We want to and we will review our reporting structure. And as we're going to release our annual results, we'll also share the way we're going to look into reporting for the new fiscal year. So rest assured, we are taking not only notice, but we're taking care about that moving on.
Okay.
If you look into the Benelux, I think we have a different situation in Belgium compared to the Netherlands. In Belgium, as you know, we are running two brands. We are running the Metro brand and the Macro brand. Metro with a solid, strong base in the HoReCa industry and a good potential forward, but also in a way, I would say, on a trajectory now on the Macro business, which is a different brand and a different business model. It has been not fast, so therefore it was also negative on like-for-like in Q3, but we are more confident about the development and our ability there. We are reviewing all what we can need to do and what we must do in the Netherlands, because there, I just say, the development has not been satisfactory.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Kiranjot Grewal of Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Hey, morning. Could you perhaps talk a bit more about the progress you're making with the Russian franchise model and potentially what the pipeline for that's looking like? And also, if you could come back to your acquisitions you made in the last 12 to 18 months, what progress have you made with those acquisitions and what changes? Have you integrated any of those into the rest of your business?
Well, on the franchise business, as I mentioned, we right now have 240 stores that are contracted on the Fasol concept. It's, I think, well known that our trader community we are serving goes into the thousands in Russia. However, I also dare to say that we are also here prudent in a way that this is a new business that we are conducting. We are very positive. We are very excited about it. But we are only pushing the pedal as we know that we can scale it to the means that it becomes a sustainable and long-term successful one. So the opportunity is in the thousands, but we will regularly now update you on how we make progress. Right now, we want to consolidate the first step and make sure that we are in full control and that the economics do make sense. That looks like that's the case. And then at some point in time, we'll release more numbers, including numbers on what's our ambition. On the midterm, we have not done so, but we'll do that most likely in the future.
What's the uplift been from the average uplift from converting from a regular trader to a franchise model?
We have not disclosed numbers yet. Would be part of some of the reporting when we go into more detail on a franchise store level. What we are doing to give you a broader sense of what we ask for, which is of course in line with the franchise concept, we want to see a significant uplift of the share of wallet. And there I can already share with you, everyone who has signed and who has contracted in has gone up significantly, actually multiple times to what we had before on spend of wallets with the Metro business.
Okay, thank you.
The question on recent M&A, I would now focus on ProAPro, which is our most recent acquisition. We closed the deal in March this year, and I think I can share with you, we developed kind of a 100-day plan, which you typically do when you acquire a company, to take advantage of upstream synergies as quick as we can, and I can confirm that was successful. The business was very, very easy, honestly, in working together with the Metro France people. So there's a very strong compatibility of cultures between the two companies, but also leadership did a great job in getting the two together. So this, I would say, is not yet like tick the box, but significant progress made. And the next one right now is to take advantage of the synergies downstream in sharing the customer database and taking advantage of cross-selling among the two entities. And this is also already starting. So I would say our capability for PMI, for post-merger integration, alongside the Pro case, is clearly improving.
Okay, great. Do you see any more opportunities for similar acquisitions, rest of Europe?
Well, yes, we've said that before. I think the wholesale market in its structure is a fairly unconsolidated market. So we see opportunities in quite a number of places. I dare to say as well, we are in that sense prudent that we are cognizant of the fact we just have done a major transaction for the group. We are getting our feet on the ground. We are making sure that our operations are super stable and the recent acquisitions are integrated well. But yes, it's true. If we see something that fits in well, we'll try to take advantage of a situation.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Andrew Gwynn of Exane. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning all. Two questions from me. So firstly on financial expenses, you know, obviously we've got this financial charge coming through from the foreign exchange moves. I think you said that the year-to-date effect, so the nine-month effect, is fairly neutral. So are we right in sort of working in approximately 50 million kind of core financial expense charge per quarter at present? And then a kind of bigger picture question. Obviously, this quarter shows, you know, one of the better like-for-like performances for quite some time. Do you think you've sort of genuinely turned the corner, or could we expect a little bit more volatility over the next few quarters and maybe even years? Thank you.
Yes, Andrew, let me comment on the topic of the net financial results. I think two elements there. You see the interest and the investment result, which has basically been stable. I think there it's important to look at the comment that we made with respect to the overall interest expense on a gross basis has significantly reduced. I think that's an important statement, and that's what you have seen over the last couple of quarters. And I think the other piece that leads to a net position that is broadly stable on that very interest result topic is a tax refund in the past and the related interest that was interest income that was related to it. So that's the reason why it stays stable, while the underlying trend, obviously, on the interest result is reducing. So it's getting into the positive direction in light with our financing activities. On the topic of the other financial results, the point that I made, yes, in the nine-month period, it is roughly a neutral position, which you can, from a guiding perspective, not always predict because there is some volatility in there. But you have seen in the last quarters also the work that we have done on reducing the volatility in that position, and we have done that wherever it's possible with some residual remaining, obviously.
On your question regarding like-for-like, let me say yes, we are very satisfied with the quarter, but we're nowhere close to declare victory that we are already in a situation that this is a trend where we can just say this continues for every single quarter without any effort. It will require massive effort to continue to be in a good shape to improve customer relevance. We are quite committed, not quite, we're very committed to our midterm ambition, which we have declared. But I also want to be completely honest and transparent here. The base last year, third quarter, was not the strongest, so we have had a benefit out of that in this quarter. But we will continue to emphasize our like-for-like sales growth for every single quarter ahead of us.
Okay, I think that's a very clear message. Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Edward Aubin of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, guys. So actually, just to follow up on the like-for-like question and the good performance you had in Q3, I guess you're 1 month to go into the in the quarter. So I guess from what you just said, Olaf, should we expect, a 2% plus increase in like-for-like in Q4 might be optimistic based on what you said? Or not, and also if you can comment, I know you mentioned some geographies which did well in Q3, but you know which geographies experienced the most noticeable sequential improvement in Q3?
Yeah, well, not comment on numbers, of course, for the single quarter because, as we said, we are not giving guidance for the full year anymore. We are not allowed to by no means, so I cannot even comment on the Q4 development, which would then imply kind of a guidance there. What we have stated, however, in our statement on Q3 in regard of the countries where we have seen a quite encouraging development, I think that gives an indication that our business models have been adjusted to a favorable recognition by our customers. And I think the other one to mention, and we mentioned that also during roadshowing and meeting many of you, is given the fact that everybody's aware how difficult and demanding the situation had been in a market like Russia, it shows that in many places within our portfolio, the like-for-like momentum, actually not only in the quarter, but if you take this sequential review of quarters over the last two fiscal years, the momentum across the rest of the portfolio has picked up. That is the reason why we were able to show that many consecutive like-for-like quarters growing in the wholesale business. So beg your pardon, Edouard, but I cannot comment the Q4 because that would imply kind of a guidance for the fiscal year, and I'm not allowed legally to do that.
Okay, understood. And just one small one. I guess delivery, is driving your entire like-for-like sales growth in cash and carry. Are you happy with the profitability of the channel with the way it's evolving in delivery?
I think it's fair to say that we had that discussion back and forth over the last years as well, that how we started it was very pragmatic, very hands-on, and not necessarily the most attractive margin on earnings. It's also worthwhile mentioning that everything that we added on acquisition that is fully dedicated on food service distribution delivers a quite encouraging and quite attractive margin. And I think we shared that before. In the new operating model, we created what we call federations, and there's a food service distribution federation. We recently gained a top expert from the industry who's now leading our food service distribution practice. And what we see is quite substantial room for improvement. So if somebody would ask us right now, are you completely satisfied with the earnings quality and that's kind of moving on sideways, we would definitely say no, because we see significant upside on how we can improve it, both by the internal benchmarking and also by the new top expert retained for the group. So we are working intensively on that, and we are cognizant of the fact that there's headroom for profitability improvement.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Niamh McSherry of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Morning. I had just one on the franchise business in Russia. Can you discuss it a little bit more? Maybe when did the project start for the 400 Fasol stores that you have now opened, and at what rate do you think that business can grow? And also, whether that is a purely Russian opportunity or whether you think it has implications for your businesses in other regions. Thank you.
So it's 240 Fasol franchise partners right now that we have in Russia. And the project was started roughly 2 years ago. And it's not a phenomenon that is only linked to Russia. We are running franchise concept in quite a number of Eastern European countries. And we right now have a couple of thousand franchise partners across Eastern Europe. And also, this is a very similar example. It is run by a trader federation, and we have one executive with a small team who is working on the franchise excellence on a continuous basis. So we have seen that opportunity for quite a while, but we also have, as I mentioned in my speech, we have been prudent in pushing the button too fast because we also know that this needs to be calibrated well in regard of how do we ensure that the corresponding share of wallet is absolutely secured with us in a way that the margin mix is good, and how to ensure that the cost of operations for fulfilling what is needed for these partners also is in line. And that's why in most of the places we have now a good platform. We are refining the concept and will grow further. As you know, in many of the Eastern European countries, we are one of the leading partners of supporting the independent grocer. Across all countries right now, we have 5,500 franchisees that have teamed up with us from Poland, Romania, into Russia, so in many, many places.
Thanks.
The next question comes from the line of Rob Joyce of Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, guys. Two from me. On the Real price investments and marketing investments you mentioned. Are these ongoing from here, and should we expect those maybe to scale in the larger quarters to come, the losses that they drove in that period? And the second one is just on Russia. Are you having to make price investments in Russia right now to try and hold the like-for-like growth? And is there any sign that the need to make those price investments is abating? Thanks a lot.
All right. On Real, I think what we have seen in Q3 was that corresponding to the competitive intensity in Germany, and given the fact that we want to get more frequency into our businesses, we have had to intensify measures for footfall, and I dare to say that was successful for top line. We still need to see how we balance that on bottom line and margin recovery, but that we will continue to intensify our presence on marketing activity is not unlikely. I think that's fair to say. On Russia, we are measuring our price competitiveness on an ongoing basis, and I think the phenomenon there is not so much linked to shelf prices, but it is clear that the promo share in the Russian market over the recent quarters has increased, and in that sense, we are exposed to a market situation which we are following, so we are not excluded from that.
And just on that one, is there any sign of that changing, that promotional step up?
On Russia, I think that very much depends on how you look forward into the GDP and consumer sentiment development. As I mentioned before, a lot of trends are indicating a good development in that sense. But I think at the current moment in time, it would be too early to signal any relaxation in that sense. I don't think that will be sensible.
Okay. Thanks very much.
The next question comes from the line of Andrew Porteous of HSBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, guys. A few from me, if I may. Just coming back on Russia for a moment, one of your competitors has talked about some sequential improvement in like-for-likes over the past couple of quarters. Is there anything to suggest or give you reasons for encouragement in Russia going forward? And then linked to that, you talk about the non-food share of sales declining. Do you think that's something that's specific to you, or do you think that's a broader market trend? And then one follow-up, if I may, just in terms of your NPS. Clearly, you're still making progress on this. But could you perhaps give us some early indications of feedback from your customers on perhaps areas that you would be looking to improve your offer?
Yeah. As I commented earlier, I dare to say that what we are looking at is, of course, the whole market environment. And you might remember last year where we have seen a quite significant recovery quarter by quarter, which also turned into the corresponding like-for-like sales. And then all of a sudden, end of year 16, the whole market saw a steep decline on food volumes. So I think what we are focusing on right now is, of course, our own performance. But even more important, what we are looking at is what is disposable income doing? How is consumer sentiment development? And are we finally seeing a pickup in food volumes? And we have not seen a food volume pickup now for almost 2 years in the market, and corresponding to some of the insights which we are hearing in the market, it looks like the food volumes are now stabilizing with a potential chance to grow. So I think this all confirms that we are seeing some favorable development, but I would refrain from guiding you on a quarter-by-quarter development right now, because I think I'll go back to the comment I made earlier. It would link to a kind of a guidance for this remaining fiscal year, which I cannot do, beg your pardon on that. On the non-food side, your observation is correct. I think whenever we are focusing to our B2B core target groups, which is HoReCa and Trader, as a corresponding adjustment of assortment, we massively increase our relevance in food articles, and we are stepping out of some of the complementary adjacent non-food categories that we used to offer. And that is a phenomenon which will continue. That's, I think, not something that will surprise you. And depending on where we are starting from in the multi-specialist market, of course, there the decline will be stronger. On MPS, let me answer this in a broader way. MPS in itself gives you a lot of indications and a lot of very valuable feedback on areas of improvement. I think the most important thing that we have introduced alongside the introduction of MPS is a governance model. A governance model which means that the associate level and the local department manager and the local store managers are fully entitled to escalate the problems so that the management can take consequences and take action on a local, regional, or even countrywide basis. And that goes alongside shelf availability, product quality, that goes alongside service levels. So it will not surprise you that it covers almost every single component of our value chain, and that is very different country by country. In those countries where our assortment excellence already is strong, it most likely then will link more to service level. In other markets where we are in the middle of changing the assortment to full relevance, many of the feedbacks we are getting are related to assortment, which of course is one of the things we can then adjust not easily but fairly quickly.
That's really helpful. There's a couple of really interesting follow-ups on some things you said there. Just in terms of, you picked out disposable income trends that you're monitoring. I'm just wondering, there's been some suggestion in the Russian market that any improvement has been sort of limited towards more affluent consumers. Are you seeing any of that broaden out to perhaps less affluent consumers that would imply that perhaps food volumes are likely to get a little bit better? And then just one quick follow-up on the MPS as well. Is that now going to become part of your, or is it already part of your store manager and associate remuneration?
Yeah, let me start with the second. We introduced an internal tool, a tool that we developed on our own record called Customer Pulse years ago. And this one has become an integrated part of incentivization across many entities. Not in all of them. Sometimes we could not do it for legal reasons, but in many of them, we have integrated that. And, of course, we have the same thing in mind when it comes to NPS. On Russia, I think what we observe there is how is disposable income actually developing? Are we seeing real wages being increasing? And there certainly is indication for that. But also, how does it correspond to certain tax charges which have increased? We are looking into all of this. So, beg your pardon. I think right now what we see is encouraging trends. That's as much as I can say, which also gives us more reassurance on the midterm development of the macroeconomics in the Russian Federation.
Okay, that's really helpful. Thanks for your time.
The next question comes from the line of Bruno Montana of Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Three for me, please. If I look at the encouraging signs in your business with exceptionals down, like-for-like improvement, clearly things are getting better. And I think about two particular parts of your business, Germany, which has always been struggling in cash and carry, and your online business, which you sort of just said can improve a lot in profitability. Given those two engines of potential profit improvements, why would the longer-term EBITDA guidance not be higher than 4.9%. If both or on just one of them gets better, I would assume you have material improvement in EBITDA. So why do you know? So would that be correct, or is there other offsetting things I'm missing? The second one is, given your shift to online, am I right to assume that the asset turns of the business will improve over time because it's more capital light, your online delivery business? Can you just quantify and guide us on how much that's improving? And my last question is your free cash flow that you're guiding the conversion. I assume that's free cash flow pre-acquisitions. Would that be correct? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your questions. On the EBITDA guidance, I think the thing to bear in mind is that we say this is all in. Our EBITDA guidance for the years to come means that any kind of a store closure cost or a restructuring cost, which of course still will happen, we will continue to optimize our business, but we will not report special items anymore. In other words, we need to earn this. We are absolutely expecting a much, much lower level than in any of the years before, but it's true that we need to earn that. So implying a roughly 4% EBITDA margin going forward means that that needs to earn some of the expenses for restructuring that, of course, will happen here and there. Not on the magnitude, as I said, like it happened before, but certainly on a continuous basis, we expect some more charges. And regarding of online, I think there is two ways to look at it. The biggest momentum right now, as I said, is on the hypermarket side. There, I would say it is a completely separate sales channel right now. Of course, we are taking advantage of pickup solutions in our stores, and we are, to be honest with you, we are still at the beginning of really taking the full advantage of having a cross-reference between our store portfolio and the very strong online sales momentum. By the way, we are also testing right now the pre-ordering and pickup on the Real.de website for food articles in 8 stores in the pilot. So there will be more to tell in the near-term quarters. On the metro side, on the wholesale side, this is predominantly linked right now to the delivery business. Roughly 20% of delivery orders are conducted through our online tools that we are offering to our customers. And there I would say it's much more focused on service level improvement than on anything else. What we want to make sure is that with the accuracy of order intake digitally, we will be able to deliver on a much more consistent and solid basis what our customers are asking for. And the free cash flow, I would hand over to Christian.
Yes, on the free cash flow definition, I would just refer you to page 18. And the short answer is yes, the free cash flow definition is excluding M&A overall.
Thank you.
And back to Olaf Koch for closing comments.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining in the first conference call of the new Metro. Should you have more questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to our team, which is accessible. And in that sense, thank you very much, and I wish you a great day. Thanks a lot.